This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Los Angeles, 2024.
Oh, welcome to Out on the Lanai, the only Golden Girls podcast you're ever gonna need to listen to. I'm H. Allen Scott / Sadie Pines.
And I'm Carrie Doherty, and today we're doing another Golden Rewind, where we go back and rewatch our favorite episodes of the Golden Girls and offer new insights since we first started breaking down these episodes way back in 2014, 10 years ago. And today we are unplugging all of the electrical appliances we're using under our blankets because we just rewatched season 1, episode 21, The Flu, aka Flu Attack, depending on who you ask.
I know. I love it so much. Now, we should probably explain why we're watching. What inspired the watch of this episode?
Yes. And before we do that, very quickly, if you are in the GGVIP Club on Patreon, today on the Rusty Anchor Happy Hour, we're talking about the Oscars.
Oscar. Here, read it all about it.
Sure. We're talking about who we think is going to win. The Oscar-winning actor that I cannot believe is in a certain commercial that I keep seeing on TV. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, we're going to talk about a world where Rue McClanahan could have gone down a different path and been an Oscar-winning actor. So if you want to, I know. And you have a lot to say about that.
It's like today's Rusty Anchor Happy Hour is like fan fiction. Is like we're creating a new life for what Rue McClanahan could have done. I mean,
it's a sliding doors scenario.
It is a bit of a sliding door scenario. And in this scenario, there's a chance that she maybe had never been on Golden Girls.
Well, I think we're going to have to talk about who would have played her part on Golden Girls had she not gotten it. This is in the Golden Girls alternate universe. And again, if you do want to hear that, sign up at our Patreon, patreon.com/Golden Girls Podcast. Did you have more you wanted to add about this?
Well, yeah, because we decided to do the Flu Attack because I was like, well, it's like awards week. And so like, you know, and I have to cover the Oscars.
That's what you were going to say.
Yeah, I have
to. You were going
to
say it before I jumped the gun the Rusty.
But it all fits. It all fits. Everything this week is themed to the Academy Awards because when we're recording this a week beforehand, but like during the week of the Oscars, you know, I'm going to be very busy with my stuff over at Newsweek. And so we're recording it all and I figured it would be fun to do sort of like an awards show, an awards episode of the Golden Girls. And there's a few of them to choose from, but I think which one did I initially suggest? It wasn't the one we decided on.
I can't remember which
neither
one
can,
you initially
I don't either,
because
there's so many like awards moments. But regardless, we decided on
it
Flu
might
Attack.
It might have been like the Rose Nyland Woman of the Year Award.
Yeah, yes. Oh,
but
yes.
This one felt more appropriate because they're all up for the award. There's that competitive nature within a friend group, which I feel like can be true to real life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this episode today because
it's a first season episode. We don't do those that often.
We don't that often. I am excited to be doing season one episodes because obviously if you go back and listen to our season one episodes, our audio is shite.
Listen, it was a different era. It was a different era. One of the things that is so great about everyone who's been with us with these past 10 years, oh my God, which is crazy because we're both only 22 years old, which is crazy that you have a child, you have a full-on toddler at 22, which is wild, Carrie. You should have a sitcom or something. What's crazy is we have grown so much over not the full lifespan of podcasts because podcasts have been around for a minute, but the heyday, the beginnings of sort of the craziness of podcasts. Like, we really have, if you listen to this podcast, which many of you have, from day one to now, even now, I just got a message just recently, someone being like, I'm binging all of your episodes. And my first response is, I'm sorry.
I always say I'm so sorry yeah, about those early ones.
And my second response is, I love that, because it is kind of wild to think that someone would want to go back and listen to us in 2015 talk about these things with that horrible audio. But I also kind of love it because it shows where we've come and how we've grown so much.
Also, I think about people who have listened to this podcast since the beginning who are still listening.
Wild.
We've all known each other now for 10 years. That's like, we're common law married to some of our audience right now. I believe
I was not prepared to be married to all of you, but my Mormon background makes me very much, you know, I'm fitting to be able to be married to so many people. So yes, I'm ready. Let's do this. It's a one big golden marriage. Just don't touch me. Just leave me alone. Just let me watch my television. Maybe tell me a joke occasionally when it looks like I'm feeling low. But for the most part, just stay on your phone and be quiet.
Yeah.
That's the best relationship.
Yeah. I hear you. No, it doesn't sound too terrible.
Yeah.
I do want to say, just as like an overall note about this episode, I love this episode so much. And I just want to give a little shout out to friend of the podcast, Golden Girls writer Stan Zimmerman, his writing partner James. The writing is so, so great in this episode. The scenes are long and really funny. Almost all of it takes place in the house. It feels like a very classic multicam episode that I love so much, which is you really just give your characters room to breathe and really see their dynamics, because not a lot happens in this story when you think about it. And I'm okay with that. It's just, you know, they all come down with the sickness.
But
wait, what's that song? What's that song? Get down with the sickness. Someone knows. Come on.
I don't know that song.
2000. It's like not Slipknot. It's like a Hoobastank, a Papa Roach.
No.
You know, come on. Get up and down with the sickness. If somebody will Shazam it and tell me in the comments on
I will
Patreon.
Never, any song you do, I will never be like, I know that song. I'm not that person.
Well, you surprise me sometimes. Like when you said you liked WWF.
Yes, but that's not music. And
no, I know, but you do surprise me with your interest sometimes.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think of something else surprising. You know what? One thing I do want to talk a little bit about, I want to give a bit of a teaser for Rusty Anchor Happy Hour, because we're not going to talk crazy about the Oscars, but like, because I really want to get into the Rue fan fiction on Rusty Anchor Happy Hour. But I do want to talk about a little bit on the main episode, how much I love award shows. I need to just put that out there. It was a childhood obsession of mine as a kid, which is what a childhood obsession is.
So 10 and, years ago when you were a child, yes, as we've established, Blanche.
Yes. And I remember it very clearly when I became obsessed with particularly the Academy Awards. But that was sort of a domino that led to all of the other award shows. Like, I became obsessed with the Emmys and a little bit of the Tonys. Not so much the Grammys, because, again, I'm not necessarily a music person. But the Oscars was really it. And it was in Mrs. Rausch's science class, where it was like end of the year and we had no more science to learn or something, so we could pick a project to do on whatever we wanted or something. And I was like, I want to do the Academy Awards, because for a few years then I had like been watching them religiously. And I remember my very first Academy Awards. It was when Tom Hanks won for Best Actor for Philadelphia, which fast forward years later, I get to interview Tom Hanks and tell him that moment and how like impactful that moment was for me, both as an obsessive fan of award shows, but also as a little gay boy and not really understanding the connection, but hearing his speech and being like, ooh, I think that's me. And so that was biggie. And then I've watched every single Oscars ever since. I've watched every single one. And for that science project, or in my science class, for that project, I then did this massive project on the history of the Academy Awards, and I memorized every major Oscar ever given out. And it became my party trick that like I did at college parties and stuff, where I'd be like, just say a year and I'll tell you the winner. You know what I mean? Like 1974, and I'd be like, The Godfather Part Two. And then someone would try and trip me up, and they would be like, that one in 1975. And then I would be like, well, that's why you're a fucking idiot. Because yes, it technically did win in the year 1975, but it was for 1974 Academy Awards. Thank you very much.
And so wait, are you saying that if I have done this before? Have I tested you before on the podcast, or have we just done this socially maybe? Because this is sounding a little familiar to me.
So yeah, if
I were to test you,
I'm rusty, but yes, I probably could, but I'm rusty.
You're rusty of the Rusty Anchor Happy Hour. Okay.
Yes, because I've lived, a lot more information has entered my head since those years.
As I'm pulling this up, yes. Oscar winners history. My connection to the awards shows is I watched a lot. I loved like the MTV Music Video Awards.
I liked those. I like those
I loved
a lot too.
I love seeing like Ben Stiller do the Mission Impossible sketch. I loved Britney with the snake. Saw all those things live. Mm-hmm. I think we're the winners here. I did, when I worked for IMDb, I got to host the Oscars for them at like this cool venue. And we hung out with and interviewed Boots Riley was there and Jonathan Van Ness was there. And it was after the first season of Queer Eye. And I just remember fangirling on Jonathan Van Ness.
Jonathan is great. Like, he's a friend. He's great.
That's lovely. He was so, I was like, I hope it comes back. He was like, me too. That was fun. And yeah. I'm trying to think. Oh, and I met Leah Thompson backstage. Well, Leah and I ended up working with. She directed an episode of Schooled that I wrote. And so we got pretty close. But I still remember I walked up to her backstage and she was charging her phone in like a gorgeous gown. I was also wearing what I think is a gorgeous gown. And I walked up to her and I feel like when people approach Leah Thompson, people talk about Back to the Future. That's the thing that they do. Of course.
I would talk about Carolyn in the City.
Well, of course you would. But me, as a girl who, when I was in junior high, high school, my sister worked at a mom and pop video store. And we used to just rent movies at the end of the day. At the end of our shift, we could take home anything that wasn't a new release. And so we watched all the bad B-horror movies. And then we started getting into like the weird, like kind of adult B-movies. And Leah Thompson did a movie with Victoria Jackson from SNL, who's like, I think, a little cuckoo bananas now, called Casual Sex.
Oh,
and
I don't know this movie.
Andrew Dice Clay is in it. It is a wild movie. It's like two friends. It's almost like a pre-Sex in the City. Two friends are single. They go to this like spa retreat health thing to go get laid. And I watched it with my sister as a child. And I told this to Leah Thompson. I said, I just want you to know, when I was young, I idolized you in Casual Sex. She's like, oh, like so that movie? Oh, yeah, I remember that one. And she said, wait, did you say as a kid? And I said, yes, as a child. And she was like, oh, okay.
That's so
nice to
funny.
Meet you. Bye bye. And then years later, I was like, do you remember that? And she was like, no. I was like, you know what? That should just go to show all of us. If you ever have a weird interaction with a celebrity, they're never going to remember. I've met Zach Braff like five times. Never remember. So I'm like, great. Because the first time when
it was really great when two-time Oscar winner Jodie Foster, when she remembered me for the second interview, I was like, that's great. I like that. But yeah, if you quiz me on Oscars, I would focus on Best Picture because I feel like I can do a domino from that. That's where I kind of start. That's where my weird, you know, counting the toothpicks situation starts.
Sure. Yes. Okay. So that's where we're going to start. Yes. Also,
and I'm better with 1960s, 70s on to modern day, but I can do older. It just takes me longer. And in the interest of podcasting, we should probably keep that in mind.
Yes, because we're going to take a break in a moment. I can't. Where's just the list? Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
By year. Of course it's on IMDb.
I'm so nervous. Just give me a year. Just give me a year. Give me a year, and then you look it up as you give me the year.
Okay. 2010.
Okay. 2010 was 2010 was The Kids Are All Right. Annette Bening should have won for Best Actress. I was very angry because Natalie Portman won for Black Swan, which means that the Best Picture winner would be The King's Speech.
Wow, very good.
Is that right? Yes, I'm right.
Yes,
I know I'm right.
King's Speech.
I know I'm right. Give me another one. This is fun.
Okay, 2000.
Okay, 2000 was the year of not Gladiator, because he had won for Gladiator. Like the no, it was no. 2000 is Glad because A Beautiful Mind is 2001. So Gladiator is 2000. Yes, Gladiator.
What? Yes, and yes on 2001, A Beautiful Mind. Hey. Okay, I'm going to go back a little bit further.
How far? Oh, God, I'm scared.
Okay,
I'm scared.
1975.
Oh, 1975 is an easy one. That's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And you know why that's an easy one?
I love that movie.
You know why that's an
easy
one? I love that movie too, but you know why that's an easy one? Because it's very rare for a film to win Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Actress, and Best Screenplay. They call it the Holy Five or the Top Five or whatever it is. And only three films have ever done it. It Happened One Night, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and The Silence of the Lambs.
Wow. Holy moly. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to give you one more. 2017.
Oh, see, the recent ones are hard because I'm always like, is that what it? Okay. Wait, hold on. Green Book. No, Parasite was 2019, I think, because it was right before COVID. And Green Book should not have won Best Picture. And that was the year before. But I think, so Shape of Water.
Yes. And you're right. Green Book was 2018. Parasite was 2019. You did so well. Give yourself a round of applause. I'm really excited to hear your Oscar predictions in the Rusty Anchor Happy Hour. And I'm just going to tip this real quick, and then we're going to take a break and get into this episode. Mm-hmm. I embarrassingly have not seen most of the motion pictures.
Oh, really?
That are nominated.
I mean, that's not surprising.
Really. Some of them I have as screeners, and I'm waiting to bring them home on a trip to see my dad so that we can watch them together. And also, I just don't get a lot of time to watch things, and I need to sit down and be able to like watch a movie to enjoy a movie. And that's usually only at night after little Oreo goes to bed. So I let little Oreo choose all of my Oscar predictions. I pulled pictures up and I asked her to point to one.
Wait, what did Oreo choose? You got to say that now. You have to give up.
No, it's for the Rusty Anchor Happy Hour. No, it's for the Rusty Anchor Happy Hour. So little Oreo made my predictions, and I'm going to see if she's a little Nostradamus. Maybe she is.
There is a
choice that she made that I'm like, if this comes true, then I need to start bringing her with me to the Ralphs to buy lottery tickets.
Give us one of her options. Just one category.
Fine, but you have to tell me who you picked.
Okay, I'll tell you if she's wrong or right.
Okay, so let's pick Best Supporting Actress.
Okay.
Should I tell you who she picked?
Of course, because I know who's going to win.
Okay, well, she picked Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple.
And unfortunately, for the first time in Little Oreo's life, she is wrong. She is wrong. And I love
who
Danielle.
Who do you think's going to win?
Oh, it's not thinking, it's knowing. Divine Joy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who?
Davine. Is it? I can't know if it's Divine or Davine, but Davine Joy Randolph from The Holdovers. She has won every single award known to man for every Best Supporting Actress win a category that exists in the world. And she will win the Oscar.
Okay, well, with that, thank you for crushing my baby's dreams. Let's go ahead and take a break and I guess come back and talk about this episode or whatever. And we are back talking about the flu, aka flu attack. I love this. We're going to play clips. I love this so much. So like you said in the opening, we chose to watch this episode because the women are all sort of competing for an award. The upcoming event that the women are excited about and buying dresses for and getting their dates for, it is a banquet charity dinner honoring the Best Friend of the Friends of Good Health Award. That is such a mouthful to say.
It is. I have nothing else to offer to that. You are correct. It is a mouthful.
Just even breaking out the best friend of the Friends of Good Health Award. It's such an interesting choice of words to put together.
Yeah.
The best friend of the Friends of Good Health. What does that even mean?
Well, it means, the best friends, say it again.
So we know that they're all talking about charity work that they do. And so that's why they're up for the award. How does that correlate to?
Wait, I want to break it down though. Wait, say the exact award title again.
The Best Friend of the Friends of Good Health Award.
Okay. So
who are the friends of good health?
Okay, here we go. So the best friend is actually the winner. So it's kind of a bit of a twofer here. So the best friend part is
given.
The winner. And the friends are the ones in which they're helping for people, their friends, to get good health.
But I guess the friends of good health. I'm the best friend to the friends of good health. We should ask Stan where that came from.
Good point. Good point. He's busy on his big book tour, though.
Yeah, that's true. I don't want to bother him. I just kept saying those words out loud. The best friend of the Friends of Good Health Award.
I mean, it is a lot to say, but if you're going to get an award, you know, fill up that plaque. You know what I mean? Like, make sure the words are like all on it. That way, it seems like they're important.
Like, it feels like they started writing out the name of the award and then deleted some of the words, but then forgot to delete the rest, which is why you get the best friend of the Friends of Good Friends.
What if the engraver of the awards had, like, a quota that you had to have a certain amount of words on each award for him to even bother to do it? So he's not just going to write someone's name. He has to, like, you got to make it worth their money. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Anyway, that was what kept me up at night after I watched this episode a few days ago. So Blanche does not have a date yet for the charity banquet, which we get one of her most iconic lines is, she talks about how she's going to have all these different men to choose from. It's not that she can't get one. It's that she hasn't yet picked which man will be lucky enough. And then she's going to have to let all the other men know that she's not taking them. Yes.
So wild about this episode. And again, I love episodes like this. I mean, because this episode is a classic episode. I think it would be, you know, it's in the tops of the episodes, of course. But I am always surprised because, you know, you see all these clips online and GIFs and memes and all of the things. And after a while, you kind of forget what episode it comes from because they all kind of morph together into the internet speak of the Golden Girls, which we love. And that's what we do. But it's so fun when I rewatch an old episode and I'm like, wow, all of these great lines and memes and GIFs and everything come from this one episode. And there are so many lines, particularly, I would say, of Blanche in this episode that are standout clips and GIFs and memes.
Yeah, well, the one I was about to say, which I feel like is one of those classic lines, is I haven't had to disappoint so many men since Daddy tore down the treehouse.
I mean, and that's like a basic one because there's like even better ones. You know what I mean? Like the one we're getting to in a bit when they're on the couch sick and she was like, you know, I forget the exact line, but she's like, it's amazing that I can look so good and feel so crummy or whatever she says. I forget exactly the quote. And people hate me when I do that. I know you're hating me right now because I can't remember the quote. I'm sorry.
I feel so bad and still look so good.
Yes, that's the line. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love Dorothy. The size difference between Dorothy and Sophia as Sophia is measuring her for her gown and she's standing in this gorgeous, long, sort of shapeless gown. I love the moment where Sophia comments that Dorothy has, because she tells her she slouches to appear shorter, and she's done it ever since fourth grade when she changed schools and everyone thought she was a substitute teacher. And I was like, I wonder if that actually played into Dorothy's decision to become a substitute teacher.
Oh, interesting. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And then this is what kicks everything off. Rose says she's feeling a little under the weather. And
now, how do you handle people being sick around you? Are you one of those people that you're like, get away from me?
Yes. And here's why. So Dorothy's reaction to Rose, the sort of like, what kind of achy? Head achy, stomach achy? That's a real Stan move. Mm. Like, not Stan, Dorothy Stan, not like Stan, the writer of the episode, not like a tastes great, less filling Stan, but my Stan, who's mm-hmm. not a news stand.
No.
He does not get down with the sickness. Mm. He does not like germs, sickness, all that stuff. So ever since I've dated him, I've become more hyper aware, hyper vigilant. I think also just since having a child.
Yeah.
Definitely like since, you know, March of 2020, mm-hmm. I have certainly paid more attention to stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if I'm with you and you are telling me like, oh, I feel awful, or like even like, but I'm probably mm-hmm. fine. I'm upset that you've already exposed me to something. So
yeah, I get that.
The fact that you're saying it is, it's just like, if you don't feel well, just tell me you don't feel well. We'll just hang out another day. So
yeah, I wouldn't actively hang out with someone if I'm feeling sick. It depends on the feeling of sickness, though, I will admit. Like if I feel like it's just allergies and I know it's just sort of like a seasonal sort of thing, I'm not like... I don't feel sick, because I feel like I know. I mean, maybe I'm the problem. I feel like I know when I am starting to feel sick, and it usually is manifested in my body and aching, and I get that head sense that I'm like, oh. But if it's just like a sneeze, I'm like, well, this is like allergies. Like, I'm not like sick. And I have that mentality. And I also am not the only time I'm ever like, get the fuck away from me, is if I have a flight. If I have a show, if I have something coming up that I know I cannot miss, I will gladly quarantine myself and stay away from people as much as possible, because I don't want to do anything that's going to fuck up. I remember I had a show in December that I had to cancel because I got COVID, and it pissed me off. Nothing pisses me off more than having to do that. And so, because I'm dedicated to my fans.
And
it's money too, and it's a lot of different things, and I was careful, but it's one of those things you couldn't really control, so whatever. I made up for it this past week or whatever, so I'm good.
Did you win the best friends of the good friends of best friends health goodness award?
Well, I was in a room with men who were mostly in harnesses and leather. And so I think I was a good friend to somebody that day, because they liked me. So, yeah. I mean, I was dressed as Sadie. Obviously, I was Sadie. So, like, clearly they enjoyed me. Very much.
Everybody enjoys Sadie.
But then as soon as I got the vibe that the party was turning into a sex situation, I was like, okay, Sadie needs to leave. Sadie's leaving. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah. It's time for me to go get my beauty sleep, everybody.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, Rose is not convinced that she's sick.
Rose is me.
Mm-hmm. She's like, no, it's just a little allergies.
Yep.
And she tells the women not to worry. And this is the first clip that I want to play.
Don't worry. We'll all be at that charity dinner. This is just an allergy. Believe me, if I were coming down with something, I'd know it. And I wouldn't risk getting the rest of you sick.
Oh, you don't have to worry about me, honey. I never get sick. I take very good care of myself. I treat my body like a temple.
Yeah, open to everyone, day or night.
I mean, just an iconic line. So good.
Yeah, one of those iconic moments from this episode. And again, this hits differently in a post-2020 world. But when Rose comes out, she's like, trust me, if I thought I was sick, I wouldn't expose myself. I wouldn't be around you. And I'm like, you know what, Rose? Would it kill you to just put on a mask and stay in your own room? Maybe just like for a day, just take it easy.
I don't think she needs to put on a mask, but just stay in your room
stay in your room.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course, Dorothy is not wrong with her prediction, because the next thing you know, the three of them are sick on the couch.
How does Sophia avoid it?
Well, I think Sophia avoids it because she's got that tough Sicilian blood that can survive like a plague. I feel like Sophia was like a child who ate sausage links off of a dirt floor. So she's got every microorganism, everything has already come and gone through her body.
Yeah.
So she's just tough like that. She probably never gets sick.
I agree. Yeah. I think I can see that totally. Yeah. I feel like I'm like that too.
Yeah. So they're all sick on the couch. I feel like, you don't get sick very often.
No, I don't really. I mean, I've had the sick of sick. I've had the big C. So like, I know it's sick. So I don't think I get sick. I don't really get sick that often, but you know, whatever. When I do, I let everyone know about it.
I'm sick.
I'm just definitely
screaming out your window.
I'm definitely Blanche when I'm sick. Will you get this for me? I don't want to walk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's nice to be taken care of when you're sick. The thing I love is that when you play sick on a sitcom, so I see you looking at yourself.
I'm thinking of a facelift.
Yeah. Okay. You're looking at yourself and you're pulling your, you're doing what Blanche does. This is so funny. Anybody watching on the Patreon, I love that you're pretending like no one can see you, like I can't see you. So playing sick on a sitcom can feel really broad, but the women do it so well in this episode.
Oh my God, Blanche's voice is such the perfect sick voice. It really is.
They all do it so well. And if you think about it, they do it. I mean, we're like minute two. These women are sick on the couch. So they're doing it for now the remainder of the episode. So I did want to play a little moment of it just so everybody can bask in the glory of how amazing and talented these actors were.
This is all my fault.
Oh, no, Rose. It's all my fault. The minute I found out you were contagious, I should have thrown you out on the street.
I said I was sorry.
Oh, I feel just terrible. My eyes are all puffy, my nose is red, my glands are swollen. Isn't it amazing how I can feel so bad and still look so good?
That's my drag.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You're right. I mean, Bea Arthur, with her deeper voice, it's already kind of built in.
Yeah.
But Rue McClanahan. Betty White's is also really great. But I agree that Rue McClanahan's voice is really,
Rue's
really
is the
great.
Best. Once again, proves my point. I think Rue McClanahan is the best actress of the bunch. I really do.
I think she
has the most range of all of the girls. It's a controversial statement, I know. Weigh in the comments of this episode, but
I agree with you.
I think she has the most range, and people don't give her credit because she plays sort of the sexy, you know, slutty one, but like, I think she does.
I agree. I do vow too. So now we're paging Dr. Richmond to Richmond Street. I wonder if it's been called Richmond Street yet at this point in the series. Probably.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's 21 episodes in, so I would assume so.
Yeah. So the doctor arrives, and again, like in a post-2020 world, not wearing a mask. I'm just going to get sick and get all my next patients sick, but okay. So the doctor arrives. I have a question for you.
Wait, I have to weigh in on something. I have to just a follow up or a callback to my saying that Rue McClanahan has the most range. Michael texted me listening in on this conversation and said, just like Kim Cattrall on Sex and the City, which I would also agree with as well.
I haven't thought that much about Sex and the City, so I'll have to get back to you on my opinion. I've only watched it once, and the movie's like twice.
We literally fall asleep to Sex and the City 2 as like a joke at least once a month.
Well, I think I've told you that my first experience with Sex and the City, my sister and mom watched it, never watched it. I was home from college, I think. I don't know. We went and saw the second movie in theaters, and that was my first experience with Sex and the City, was the second movie.
Wow.
So, yeah. Anyway, but then I binged the whole series when I was pregnant, so that was a fun thing to save for that. But I have a question for you. I love the doctor, the woman who played the doctor. She was so great. I loved all of the business that she was doing while she was talking. Why was she examining their eyes?
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but like, I would assume that maybe the eyes being dilated, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's like a sign of like something could be off. I don't know. I really don't know.
I wasn't sure. She was checking their glands, and I was like, yep, okay, you're seeing if they have swollen glands. She was looking in their mouths, check, gonna make sure that those tonsils aren't inflamed, maybe looking for some strep throat. But I couldn't figure out what the deal was with looking in their eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, still, like, I liked her. This guest star got some lines. She was out here. She was delivering them. Mm-hmm. Like, this guest star felt like a star.
I mean, she did. She looked like the fourth Golden Girl. She felt right in with them.
Yeah.
Like, she fit right in with them. She felt like she could have fit right in with them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she tells the women, hey, I know you want to go to this banquet for the Friend of Friendly Helpers Goodness Fitness Award, but you're going to be sick for at least a week. Mm-hmm. And the women are really upset by this. They've really been looking forward to going to the banquet. And I love Rose says, if modern science could come up with cinnamon dental floss, why can't they find a cure for the flu?
You do a good sick voice, too.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not good with voices. How would I sound sick? I just sound like I'm whining. I don't sound sick.
You're doing your it's Pat. Yeah.
Oh, I want to go.
Well, maybe don't try to do a voice, but you know, you just kind of try to like make your voice sound like you're having a hard time. Just don't like breathe.
I can't.
Don't
really
breathe through your nose.
I can't do it. I can't not do a voice.
Now you're just trying to do Kathleen Turner. Try to sound sick.
Old Man River. I can't sound sick. I don't feel good. I can't do it. I literally can't do it. How do you do that with your voice?
You just do it. There's just a part of your voice and you just block it off so that it sounds like you can't breathe maybe out of your nose.
I can't breathe out of my nose. I can't do it. I literally can't do it. Something I can't do.
This is so funny. I'm going to pull this clip and put it on social media because this one's really making me laugh. What did when you were growing up, what did your mom do for you when you were sick? Because these women, like, I love Sophia's pesto story when she's like eating the little raisins out of the raisin box. You know, Rose has her hot toddies. They're all sort of talking about what everybody would, you know, their parents would do for them when they were younger, which, again, these really great character moments that we get from such a simple storyline that I love so much. So, yeah, what did your mom do for you when you were a kid and you were sick?
My mom gave me the remote, told me to drink lots of water, and she had to go to work.
Oh, so you were a sick kid. You were stuck home alone because your mom had to work to provide for your family.
Yeah, my parents worked. So I loved it because I could watch all the daytime television. Oh, my God. I'd watch Regis and Kathy Lee then. And speaking of, The Bachelor got a lot of shit for not knowing who Kathy Lee Gifford is. And I loved that. And I'd watch the Vicki Lawrence show. I'd watch Mama's Family. I'd watch them all. Ricky Lake. Jenny Jones.
Of course you did. You watched Maury.
I mean, some days I would just be like, I'm sick, just to watch Jenny Jones.
Yeah.
She's like doing like cooking on Facebook now.
Is she? I was always wondering what happened to Jenny Jones after her show.
Yeah. You and I are the only two.
Okay. Well, when I was a kid, anytime I got sick, my mom, I only wanted to watch one movie, and that was the original Pete's Dragon. And so I would watch that movie over and over and over again, and my mom would like color. I remember being sick and she would like color with me in a coloring book, and I remember being like, wow, she's so much better at coloring than I am. But that's what she would do for me when I was sick is, yeah, she would just watch Pete's Dragon with me over and over again.
That's so cute,
that was the one movie I wanted to watch.
Our parallel, like, our universes were very strange in that, like, here I am being like, ooh, cheating husbands on Oprah, yes, tell me more, and you're like, Pete the Magic Dragon. I don't know.
Nope,
the
that's
words.
Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know these things. But you were watching Dragons.
Yeah, with like Helen Reddy singing like, I've got one friend by my side. Yeah, it was very different.
Wow, full circle.
Although Pete's Dragon, if you watch the original, the opening, I just jumped because I thought a bug was crawling down my shirt, but it was just a piece of my shirt. If you watch the original, the movie opens with Pete. He's in a foster home and they're very abusive and he's run away and they're in a swamp played by Shelley Winters. And they're in a swamp looking for him, and they're like, Petey, Petey, Petey. And they're like, when we find him, like, we're going to kill him, basically. It's like frightening what they do. And then Mickey Rooney is drunk in the whole movie. But wow. Anyway.
Wow.
So
we should take a break.
Let's take a break because then we need to play the most iconic moment of this episode.
Please.
And we are back, and I think we just got to go right into it. This is the most iconic moment of this episode.
Let's just go right into it then.
Dorothy.
Where's my heating pad?
How should I know?
If this isn't it, I'd like to know what other electrical appliance you're using under that blanket.
What a big laugh.
So good.
Oh, I love that joke so much. It is so funny. And I love just the two of them are fighting, and then Rose, God bless her, she's trying to remain optimistic and cheerful during this whole ordeal. But I think really it's because she's toasted on the hot toddy from her folk medicine book,
the alcohol while sick, I understand that's like a throat thing that people do, and I get that, but like, it doesn't sound appetizing to me.
Here's what I will say. I mean, you know that during the Rusty Anchor happy hours, my drink of choice, I'm always drinking hot toddies because I love lemon. I love honey. And I think that's where it comes from. Roses, it's the hot water, it's the lemon, it's the honey, some cloves. I think that's the vibe she's getting, but she's just putting whiskey in it because, I don't know, maybe it's killing something on the way down, but I mean, put a ton of whiskey in mine. They're so good.
Yeah, I know my family friend Colleen, she does a hot toddy situation, and I'm always surprised by it, but, you know.
Love it. When I lived in New York, my friend Courtney and I, in like the dead of winter when it was freezing in New York, we'd always walk to our favorite bar and get hot toddies because we were very, very cold. Mm. And it is such a good, like, cold winter night drink.
See, I have to say,
I know. I like a good, like, spiked hot chocolate, too.
Did you notice
when Dorothy and Blanche are both on the couch, and then Dorothy blows her nose and Blanche gets upset and she kind of throws the blanket off of herself? Did you notice how much of Rue McClanahan's legs we were getting?
And they were good legs. That lady had legs, which we know because we've seen them often on this show.
Legs going on for days. I was like,
days.
She looks so good. I also, Rose laughing. So after Rose makes, she's sitting on the chair and she makes the joke, the Dorothy like banana nose joke. And then she goes, ha ha ha. And she laughs. That laugh is in the opening titles.
Oh, interesting. That's good. That's a nice little nugget.
Yeah. Which if, and you have to be a Patreon member to know this, but Marsha Posner Williams in our bonus interview told a really great story about the origin of the main title sequence.
Oh, also, we should, a little tease too. We have a lot of fun interviews coming up of people involved in the Golden Girls coming to the Patreon. So please subscribe for that.
I'm very excited. I think, some of them, I don't know that anybody's ever talked to them on Golden Girls podcast before. I'm very excited. This to me felt so relatable. And I feel like this would be like you and I, if we were kids homesick from school at the same time. Blanche and Dorothy, they're fighting over what TV show to watch.
Oh, we would fight.
Well, yeah, obviously, because I would want to watch Pete's Dragon and you would want to watch. Actually, I feel like
you would get into Oprah. We would sit there and discuss the issues.
Yeah, I would be like, yes, I trust you. So Rose wants to play cards or bake cookies.
I don't want to bake cookies. I'm already hot.
You're sick.
Yeah. Someone bake me cookies. Like,
when I am sick, all I want to do is lie on the couch and watch TV. It is remarkable that it is just, this is the only moment in this entire episode.
I mean, sick or not,
want to watch TV.
Sick or not, all I want to do is lie on the couch and watch television. Like, I don't know. That's literally my life dream, is to stay on the couch and just watch television and talk about it on a podcast for the rest of my life.
Can I tell you, I have especially when we're in LA and we get one of those really rainy days where we can't go outside.
Mm.
I have, these are days that, like, pre having a child, I would just, like, I'm going to lie on the couch. I'm going to watch movies. Mm. I'm going to play Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to the someday in the future when little Oreo is at school and it'll be a rainy day and I will just be able to lie on the couch and watch Xbox and TV.
I'll FaceTime you.
Yeah, sure. We can FaceTime and watch something together. I miss those days so much. I miss them. I love my child so much. I do miss those days. So the women fight. They all end up fighting. They all retreat to their rooms where, I mean, presumably they all have TVs in their rooms and could be in bed resting and watching TV in their own rooms. It is funny that they're all, like, up until this point, kind of the living, they're behaving as if the living room is the only space that they can all exist in, which I really like.
Yes.
So even after a night's worth of presumably terrible sleep, they're all still being sour towards each other in the morning. This is when we get the orange juice bit with
another
Rose.
Another classic bit.
The just perfect comedic timing.
Yeah.
A joke that is written for a multicam. It's just all, it's in that physical comedy with the in Rose being behind Dorothy, mm-hmm. and we can see Dorothy's
and looking.
Face.
Yeah. So good. It's I think so they even perfect. Used that clip during one of the Emmys presentations for one of them. I forget, probably for Bea Arthur. But I think they did.
It's so perfect.
Yeah.
And then I want to play Blanche's entrance into this scene now.
Please, always.
All right, I want an answer, and I want it now. Which one of you has been dipping into my Vicks vapor rub?
I took it, and my chest was already completely coated. I did it out of spite because you lost the pre-measured cup off my NyQuil.
Rose, I took your stupid cup. And you know why? Because I feel lousy, and being mean to you makes me feel better.
Dorothy's Bordak, you can go straight to H-E double hockey sticks.
Double hockey sticks.
Oh, what language. My ears are burning.
You know that Blanche was the mean girl in school. She was, Melissa George? What's her name in Mean Girls? I forget her name, but she
Regina
is the
George.
Regina Wait. George. Is that
Blanche
Regina George?
Or Dorothy? Yes,
Blanche.
Regina
Blanche.
George.
Blanche is Regina George. She's the one who will take the low route and go, oh, are you angry? Like, and just mock them. And
that,
like,
sounded like you trying to do a sick voice again.
I can't. I don't feel good.
I do love, and it feels so honest, like such an honest moment of Dorothy being like, being mean to you makes me feel better.
And I support this because sometimes you just gotta be mean. Sometimes you just gotta say, fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, you just gotta. I firmly believe that. It's healthy.
I actually think that it's pretty adult and maybe sort of emotionally responsible, maybe, for Dorothy to say, I'm only being mean to you because it's making me feel better. Like, you know, I'm not being mean to you because I necessarily believe these. I am lashing out because it's making me feel good. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's, I'm just glad that she's being honest about the reason behind it, which is really fun. It's, I love all of this. I love it when these women fight. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, and also Blanche saying, like, who took my NyQuil cup cap or whatever, the cup. It very much like when she's like, okay, who ate my sensible meal?
Yeah, yes.
That desperate kind, like, of, like,
she's
back up
angry.
Against the refrigerator.
Yes.
And so the women, they sort of come to blows. Then they finally, you know, make up with each other. It's very sweet. And then again, I love this little twist until they learn that Sophia thinks one of them is up to win the best friends of good health award. And when Sophia brings this up and Rose mentions it, you can almost hear Betty White stumble on the words when she tries to say the best friend of the Friends of Good Health Award. I know I'm not the only one. Just watch that moment because Betty definitely stumbles on it. And yeah. So I also want to play a moment with Blanche because I want you to listen to this little snippet and I want you to listen to Blanche's line and tell me if you notice anything about Blanche here.
You work with the senior citizens, you put in time at the daycare center, and you were the volunteer dummy for the fireman CPR class.
And don't forget that that program was my idea, too.
Program.
Well, maybe you're right. I might have a small chance. After all, besides you, who else is there?
That's it. She said program.
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 I thought Beatrice Arthur was the only one who pronounced it program.
I mean, you know, maybe that's a part of Rue McClanahan. Maybe B took it from Rue.
But then B is the only one who says
maestro. I just sent you into a portal, didn't I?
And diaper and Marguerite.
What if Rue McClanahan was B. Arthur's acting teacher?
I wonder if anybody could find a moment where Rue McClanahan says the word program on the show just to see if that was a fluke. I'd never
or
noticed
in
that
in any
before.
Other show that she did. I want to hear her say program.
Yeah. I don't know. Was that like the transatlantic, the transcontinental accent?
Yeah, the accent thing. Yeah, maybe.
From
I don't know.
Actors in like the 30s and 40s. I don't know.
I need to get in the car. Let's go get in the car.
The program jumped out at me.
Program.
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 So all three women are convinced that they're the one winning the award. They are insisting on going. And who is it? I think is it Blanche who says, if you can get a date looking the way you look, you deserve that award.
Yeah, which is a great line. I mean, this episode is filled with just drag queen jokes. I mean, it's just so good.
Great. And then I love at the end of the scene, Rose does like a really passive aggressive thing. She's like, you've done lots of good things, Dorothy, but not enough people like you. Sorry. Which, you know what? Dorothy was being mean to you because it made her feel good. So I think it's okay that you're doing
the same thing. Yeah, it's okay. I think it's fine. And it's also a good joke.
And now we're at the banquet. The first time we're out of the house, these
women...
They're
all still sick. I mean, they should not be there. They are super spreaders.
The hubris of going into a public space like this when you are sick just because you think you're up for an award. I mean, there's terrible air filtration going on. If I were their dates, I'd be so mad because it's first you said you weren't going because you were sick. Now you're like, oh no, I'm going. I assume you're no longer sick. And now I'm here and we're sitting 1 foot apart from each other and you are terribly, terribly ill.
Yes. They are the problem.
They are the problem. However, they look amazing. There's so much iridescent fabric happening. And I mean, hats off to Judy Evans.
One little match and they all go up in flames. I mean, literally, there is just no fabric is safe in this scene.
I love it. It makes me feel like I'm deep undersea where I'm so far into the depths of blackness that all I see are the animals that shine and shimmer.
I see that.
The jellyfish.
Yeah. Pretty. I would never want to do that, but I would watch.
Oh, never. That's terrifying. Yes. Oh, I love those. Those are my favorite. I love those ones where they are like, we're going to go down so deep.
I like a murder documentary more so.
Well, sure. But we're talking about fish in the ocean.
Yeah, I pass those. But I do like them. I mean, they're pretty. It's just then I would be like, let's find some murder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I always go back to those, but. So there is, and I know what Elliot Glazer would say about this when Dorothy sneezes and they kind of lean into her manliness, where Elliot always points out that they were always picking on Dorothy for this kind of thing. And because later Dorothy's like, at least I have a man. And Blanche goes, have one. Sounds like you swallowed one.
Which is actually a good joke. I think
it is a great joke. Do you remember Sucrettes?
Sounds familiar.
a sucrète was kind of like a Ricola, from what I recall. When they said sucrète, I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard of that word. They were cherry. They were like lozenges. Yes.
I
wild
do remember that.
Cherry in like a tin
can. Yes. And they're so delicious. I remember enjoying them. I think they switched in years later to like being in a box. But yes, yes, I do remember those.
Yeah, I could completely forget. I was like, oh, sucrètes. Huh. That's a word that I hadn't heard for a long time. I forgot about those things. What a weird name for a product. It sounds so much like secrets, but it's a sucrète.
Keep
I don't know.
Secret maybe. With sucrète.
Yes. See, but it doesn't really, but like
if,
advertising.
If you want to go to the party and not let anyone know you're sick, keep the secret with sucrète.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm an ad person. Someone hire me.
Yeah. Wow. Look at you, you Donna Draper.
Wow. Where's my briefcase? I have a job to do.
advertising on my time.
I am working so hard right now.
Oh. Uh-oh. Did you just delete us? Did you stop the recording?
No, I just touched a button. Okay, go on.
I love that Sophia met her date down by the dog tracks, that she was down there at the dog tracks and he owns a flower shop. Yeah. What a way to really combat gender stereotypes in the 80s, Golden Girls.
I loved Blanche's date. I loved that she dragged him from the waitstaff. That was really funny.
The way she describes him, it's like she's describing Barbara Thorndike. She's like, oh, he's an author. He just came out with a book about the Biscayne Bay.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. Yeah. It's like she was describing Barbara Thorndike. And honestly, when it is revealed that Blanche paid her date to be there, it just keeps getting worse and worse for her, right? Because it's bad and humiliating enough for Blanche that she had to essentially hire a quote actor waiter as her date. Then it's revealed she paid him $25 to do it.
Which in 1985 is a lot, or 86.
Yes, that's a lot of money. And then he only gives her back 10 after his identity is caught. I cringe so hard for her. Like, you know, it ate her up inside.
Yeah.
So now the women are back to fighting. They're being passive aggressive towards each other. And then the sweetest outcome of all, which is that Sophia ends up winning the award.
You know what I really loved about this moment is, and I probably said this on our first watch too, I love how excited and happy Dorothy was.
Same.
Like, yes. I mean, gleeful. It was so almost out of character for Dorothy to be this energetic and excited. And I loved that B made that choice because it's exactly what a daughter should be for a mom.
Yes, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It's almost like we're watching Bea Arthur react to Estelle Getty winning an Emmy.
Yep.
And you're right. They're fighting. She was expecting to get it. And then, yes, when her mother wins, that level of excitement, you're right. It's so perfect. And it really is. It just shows how much she loves her mother. And that was such a great acting choice from Bea Arthur. It's so, so great. And I love that. And again, this very, very simple episode, but I love that Sophia's speech about being lucky to have great friends at home. And and when you're lucky to have great friends like that, you just want to pass it on, and how that sort of makes all of the women realize how silly that they were being.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they all make up, and I just love seeing that sweet, nurturing Sophia, and which definitely makes up for all the times when she's like a mean bitch.
Yes.
And the women toast to friendship, and then they
and
sneeze
it's
in their
sweet.
Champagne glasses.
It's such a good first season episode, and it's kind of like the template for all of these kind of episodes to follow in a way.
Yeah, it was just so, so good. It's beautiful. Anyway, I love this episode so much.
Well, should we take a break and come back with our golden takeaways?
That was really good coughing.
Thank you.
You got it.
God, I can cough. And we are back with our golden takeaways, which is a nugget of truth or inspiration
that you can apply to your life or the lives of our listeners. Carrie, what's your golden takeaway from this episode?
See, even though you're pinching your nose, it still sounds like you're modulating your voice in some way. Did you just try pinching your...
So I'm just pinching my nose right now.
Okay, that actually is probably the closest thing.
Wow, I suck at this.
You're great at it. My golden takeaway. So you know how in the episode when Blanche comes, when Blanche, you know, admits that she paid this guy to be her date because she said her actual date took one look at her and said, no way.
Mm.
Blanche's would-be date in this episode is the only one making good decisions in this episode
mm-hmm.
because he saw her and was like, wait, you're not better. You're still sick. Fuck mm-hmm. this. I'm mm-hmm. not getting sick. I'm going to Iowa next week for a wedding and I don't want to. And so he was like, no, and just yeah. went home.
Smart.
Great, great decision. Anyway, that was my golden takeaway. He was the only one making good decisions in this episode. And I guess mm. Sophia.
But. Yeah, Sophia was too. My golden takeaway for this episode would be, well, you know, I'm really, my brain is going immediately towards all of the wonderful daytime television talk shows I watched as a child when I would sometimes fake being sick just to watch them. And I think more people should watch daytime television because it's one of my favorite things. So that's my golden takeaway. Watch more daytime television. Record it. Watch The View. I watch The View every single day. If you're watching The View, go ahead and DM me because I guarantee you I have a response because I have taken a little time to enjoy The View.
We should do a Rusty Anchor Happy Hour where we watch some old classic daytime television episodes.
Ooh, I would do that. Oh my God, I would so do that.
Do you remember Jude on Jenny Jones? The mean guy?
No, I don't. I don't remember guests on Jenny Jones. I just remember Jenny Jones.
Oh, he was
and
a
topics.
Recurring. He
no,
was
I
a
don't.
Recurring.
I don't remember Jude.
He was like the only kind of not famous person because he was like famous in the Jenny Jones world. Anyway, we can talk more about it
That's
offline.
A very niche fame.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Yes.
Oh, Rude Jude. That's what they called him. Rude Jude.
Rude yeah. Jude.
Google Rude Jude.
It's like on 30 Rock. The rural juror.
Oh, the rural juror.
Rural juror.
The rural juror.
Yeah.
All right. For those still listening, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Out on Lanai. We will catch you all back here next week for more Golden Girls greatness.
And y'all, you know we're Marta Mom Plus. Mom, so go subscribe to Mom Plus. Moguls of Media. It's fantastic. We love Alaska and Willem. Thanks for having us. And you can follow us on social media at Golden Girls Pod on Twitter, Out on the Lanai Official on Instagram, Golden Girls Pod on the Face Page, and I am H. Allen Scott / Sadie Pines on most of the idgels.
Those still genuinely make me laugh when you do that. Is that a Stanley Cup?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
This is a tall cup. T A L. Towel.
I don't know.
I got
this
it at
American
Target.
Life. It's
I got
this
it at
American
Target,
life.
And then Michael immediately broke the straw, so I had to put another straw in there. But yeah,
cool. And I am Squid Eat Squid and Squidzy on Instagram. And if you want to check out the GG VIP Club, go to patreon.com/GoldenGirlsPodcast. You can sign up for free, still get some cool stuff, or you can pay $5 or $8 a month and get lots of cool stuff, including tons of bonus video content. And also, if you want to help out the podcast, you can leave a rating and a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
It's really helpful. And if you're on Patreon right now and you're watching this, you can see me do my facelift that I give myself every episode. So here we go. Facelift. That's what you're watching. Remember,
as always,
stay golden. Stay golden.
And stay healthy.
Oh, yeah. Take that vitamin C, baby.
Out on the Lanai is not endorsed by Whit Thomas Harris Productions, Touchstone Television, Disney, or any of its subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only.
All names, pictures, audio, and video clips of the Golden Girls are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and/or copyright holders.